This is the Pitch Vision My Cricket Coach Show number 69. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision My Cricket Coach Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com and email us on mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchliffe in the UK.
I'm Kevin Sampath in Australia. Coming up in the show, we have a chat with the King of Batting, Gary Palmer. We also have a chat with the ECB's lead psychologist, Dr. Will James. And before we move on, David, since this is show number 69, you have some interesting facts about 69 and cricket, don't you?
Well, I don't know about interesting, but they're certainly facts. We've had a little rummage around, and we found a couple of things about the number 69 that's related to cricket. It was in 1969 that the Sunday League started here in England, and it was kind of the beginning of all those multiple one-day competitions that we have over here that even to this day still rumbles on. It was a 40-over competition back then, and of course we've had all the controversy about ditching 50-over cricket in domestic List A cricket over here in England. So it's kind of resonant, the past sort of coming forward to the future, because people criticised one-day cricket at the time, and people are now saying the same criticisms about 2020 and 40-over cricket now. So it's interesting. I mean, what do you think about playing one-day cricket?
I enjoy it, David, but I think it should be done in modified quantities. I don't think it should be the main form of cricket. I think my main form of cricket would be declaration type of cricket. It's actually a lot more technical. You're playing good shots, good bowlers playing each other, and it's a treat to watch as well.
From my own playing, the type of game that we play is more towards the test cricket format, just a one innings version of test cricket, if you like. And that, for me, that gives you a lot more flexibility. If you can declare, if you know you've got 100 overs in the day, and you can declare, then you know, you can declare at 45 overs and give yourself an extra 5 overs to bowl the opposition out, because they've got to bat for 55. It just gives it that little, and you've got to bowl them out to win. You can't just score more runs, otherwise it's a draw. I think that gives it a lot more. There's a lot more tactical, and it's a lot more technical, and it's a lot more, you've got to use your brain a lot more. Whereas with one day cricket, it can be over in the first hour. If you lose 4 wickets or 5 wickets in the first hour of a one day game, then chances of you winning from that position are very slim indeed. And of course, watching, I'll always prefer watching test cricket. And 69 also, I had a hunt around the player squad numbers, and not many players have number 69 as a squad number, but Angelo Matthews, the Sri Lankan seamer, does. So I think that says something about his sense of humour, but we'll probably just leave it at that.
Well, David, let's move right along to our pre-season newsletter on Pitch Vision. I know us Australians aren't in our pre-season at the moment, but I'm pretty sure you were saying something about us missing out if we don't subscribe now.
Yeah, there is what we've been doing for the last few weeks, and we're going to be doing right up to the start of the English cricket season in May, is we're going to be running this newsletter. So if you're not a subscriber to that newsletter, then you're missing out, because the newsletter contains a lot of content that we have not put up on the main site, and we're never going to put up on the main site. So every week there's at least one new article, completely new article that's never been anywhere else. It's usually two new articles. And we also have an exclusive podcast that we do to talk about pre-season and various other things that only go into that newsletter. So if you are in pre-season now, if you're listening in England or in Europe or in North America, somewhere like that, and you're in the run-up to your season, that's great. I would recommend that you head over to pitchvision.com/pre-season and put your name down for the email newsletter. But even if you're not, even if you're in Australia, New Zealand, if you're in India and you're playing now, then it's a really good time to sign up anyway, because you can sort of keep all those articles and all that free information back for when it is your pre-season time. So if you haven't put your name down, pop your head over to pitchvision.com/pre-season and pop your name in and get the newsletter. And I guarantee, even if you get both newsletters, even if you get your version of the main newsletter, there'll never be the same article in both newsletters at the same time. They'll always be different, and there'll always be exclusive stuff in the preseason one. So if you haven't got it yet, you're missing out. You're losing out on free content. So get your name down. But let's talk about your game, because you had a bit of a rain affected game last time we spoke. So what happened this weekend?
That's right, David. We were sort of affected by rain. We had to modify our overs a bit. We only had 18 more overs left to bat with 3 wickets in hand. And we were actually pretty glad, because we didn't think we'd last the 25 overs which we were given the week previous. And because of that, the other team had to bat 45 overs. So it turned into a one-day all of a sudden. When our tail-enders and our lower-order batsmen went out, we just told them to sort of try and stay in, don't try and go for anything stupid, because if we got out too early, the other team would get our overs, which we lost.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So we were trying to sort of play it patient, and for the first time in the season, David, our lower order actually stuck out there.
Excellent.
We managed to survive 18 overs, and we got 155 on the board, which we thought was pretty good on a waterlogged outfield. And so when we went into bowl, we thought, if we can get a few early wickets, because this was the team coming first, David.
Yeah.
We thought if we can get a few early wickets, maybe we'd be in the game. And then one of our slower medium bowlers, David, he came in and sort of ripped through the middle order and sort of opened the game right open for us. And in the end, we came away with a 60-run victory. There were 95 all out. So it was a massive victory beating the number one team, considering we haven't won a game since our break. So, but it goes to show that all of us had no expectations, because we were already out of the finals. So we just put in everything without any expectations on our back.
So what was the turning point? Because people talk about momentum, and I think that's a very interesting area, how you get the ball rolling your way, if you like. You know, how do you get? And I think momentum is a real thing. It does happen in, you know, teams can suddenly kind of go a bit crazy and collapse, as you know. So when do you think that momentum shifted? Can you pin it down to any particular point?
I think there were two major turning points in the game, David. The first thing was our low order sticking out for 18 overs. Because that immediately got them into a negative thinking mode. Because 150 runs from 45 overs is a pretty tough task on a slow outfield and medium boundaries. And then our opening spell as well was really aggressive, which made them think that they're in for a hell of a contest. Because the last time we played them, they were very attacking and positive. But this time, after our opening spell, every batsman coming out tried to play defensive to try and see out the overs, to try and sort of build a partnership, which I thought was... played right into our hands.
And then you just bowled well and fielded well, and suddenly everything started going your way. It's funny how that happens, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It's a massive momentum shift, which is great for us, because I think that's the first time that's ever happened for us against a good team this season. So it was a good feeling.
I do have a lot of belief in that that idea of being able to get psychologically on top of a team. That word that commentators use is momentum, but I think that's just shorthand for saying we've got the psychological advantage here, and that is a big advantage, especially if you've got two teams who are roughly equal in skill. If you've got one side who have the advantage, and the other team are thinking, hang on a minute, how are we going to get out of this, then that will win you a lot of games. And it's good for me, of course, to think about these things, because as you may have read on the on the Pitchers
captain.
Academy pages, I've stuck my hand up to be captain at the annual general meeting of the club, and me and one other chap went for it, and we had to leave the room while they voted. So it's all very serious, and they voted me in. So I'm going to take up my position come the start of the season. So I've been. As I wrote in the article at the time, you know, my first thought was to have 50 first thoughts. What am I going to do? How am I going to do it? I mean, the good thing is that it's a pretty good team anyway. So that I don't want to make too many changes anyway. Probably a couple of things I'd like to do is try and be a bit clearer on some people exactly what they need to do, but most of them know exactly what they need to do. And also improve our running between the wickets. I'd love to find a way of doing that.
Well, David, I'm interested to know, have you actually sat down and made a plan of how you're going to approach these aims? I mean, have you actually sat down and created a schedule of how you're going to tackle the issue of running between wickets? I mean, create a training schedule or anything for your team?
Yes and no. It's a bit of a tricky one, that, because doing things like having team meetings and defining roles and filling out sheets and stuff like that and brainstorming and all things like that. That's not the kind of thing that would go down very well in my team. Although that is kind of the way I work. I like to write things down and do things that way. I know that probably wouldn't go down too well. So what I'm doing is I'm probably going to try and sneak it in, if you like. And the way I'm going to do that is just make sure that everybody knows what I expect from them as a captain. I expect them, if they can come to training, to come to training. And when I'm at training now, I'm going to try and take a role in practicing running between the wickets. And then sort of gradually, by talking to players informally in the bar and in, just talk, just when you're on the pitch and during training sessions, things like that, just generally chatting and trying to get the point across of, this is what I want you to do. This is your job on a Saturday afternoon. So that's really my plan. My plan is not to have a formal plan, but to do it sort of on the quiet, if you like, and informally, and just so people know exactly what they're doing, so they don't get confused on a Saturday afternoon what their job is to do. If they're the opening batsman, do I want them to go out and play a Shea Weg type innings, or do I want them to be there at the end and score a useful bat for 50 overs, and on the last ball of 50 overs get the run that gets you 100. That's very different from smashing a quick 50 in the first five overs, isn't it? And then sort of go about my business, trying to get the best out of players by finding out what makes them all tick. I think that's very important, finding out what makes someone tick, so you know what sort of person needs to be said, come on, stop doing it half-heartedly, get on with it, compared to someone who you need to have a quiet chat with them and say, is it going okay? What's wrong? What do you need me to do? The different types of personality. So, I'm kind of planning that, but I'm keeping most of it in my head.
Well, do let us know how it all goes, David.
I'll keep you posted every week. Fingers crossed, my aim is for another championship. Make it 2 years
Sweet.
in a row. That's my overall aim. We're good enough. I've just got to get the best performance out of everyone.
That'll be a good debut, wouldn't it? Winning a championship on your first year as captain.
Exactly. But why not aim high, eh? Have a big goal and go for it.
Yeah, exactly. That's the attitude, David. Well, we're back again to pick the brains of our batting coach, Gary Palmer, who's actually answering a bowling question this week. Gary was a first-class cricketer who played for Somerset, who now helps young players in the game with CCM Academy. So let's have a listen to how Gary tackles his bowling question for this week.
Hi Gary, welcome back.
Hi, David.
Got a bit of a change for you this week. We've got a bowling question.
Just keep me on my toes, right?
Exactly. Yeah, it's from Keegan, and Keegan asks, "How do I cock my wrist when I bowl? I see that Brett Lee does it, and when he bowls his slower ball, it's about 120 kilometers an hour, not using his wrist. But when he does cock his wrist, he can bowl it up to 145, which is about 90 miles an hour. So how does Keegan copy that?"
It's pretty easy to just, put your two fingers out in front of you, thumb underneath, and cock your wrist without a ball in your hand. That's obviously cocking the wrist. And if you're a bowler now running into bowl with the ball in your hand, as you take off in that delivery stride or pre-delivery stride, as long as you're showing the ball to the bowler with your two fingers cocked back, and your right arm bowled, or your right arm tucked in close to your body, that is all you do.
And then you flick it forward as you're releasing the ball.
The key thing is, as you release the ball, you leave those two fingers back and that wrist cocked back for as long as you can, so you can get as much flexibility out of your wrist and those two fingers for that little bit extra pace. But also, when you let go of the ball, you'll find that as your fingers come down the back of the seam, the ball, it feels like you're letting go of it and it's rotating backwards, which for me as a bowler gives you just that little bit much more contact with the fingers on the ball, a bit more feel, bit more time to get your wrist in the right position. And generally, when you feel it go off the inside of that middle finger, and it stays behind that ball for as long as you can, you know the seam's going to go down straight. That ball's going to swing, or it could deviate off the seam.
And was Keegan right to say that if you don't do that, that can make a severe difference to the speed that you're bowling at?
It's going to make a little bit of difference. I don't think you're talking severe. You know, if Keegan runs up and he's got a hell of a quick arm and he's 6'2", he's going to be rapid whether he turns that wrist back a little bit. I think holding that wrist back will give you a little bit more. But I think above all, it's going to give you more control and it's going to make sure that you hit that seam and you swing the ball more often.
And speaking of his action, he had a second question, a follow-up question regarding a point on his action.
Yep.
Which is he doesn't have a braced front leg. He said he tried putting on a knee brace to see if it can to help him keep his front leg straight, but it doesn't help. Is there anything he can do to better brace that front leg so it doesn't collapse as much?
Without actually looking at his bowling action, because all you know, and his physical makeup, it's very difficult to answer that.
Mm.
But you know, if his leg's bending slightly, that's not too much of a problem. You know, as long as he's well aligned and his rhythm's going through the crease, he's pretty upright as he lets go of the ball, you know, standing tall. Those are sort of key things that he needs to do well. Maybe when he runs up to bowl, as he jumps, he's leaning forward too much as opposed to just being upright, maybe slightly cocked back, but as he jumps, the key thing with bowling is as you jump, you've got to make sure you keep travelling forward through the air. A lot of people make the mistake of running up, stopping, they just jump straight up and then near enough come straight back down again, fall away and fire the ball down the leg side. Just as you go into that pre-delivery stride, two or three strides before, you've got to be thinking about jumping up, forward and going through that crease, getting a nice momentum through the crease. And to lean back, you know, just to get that chin back slightly to gather yourself may well help him with that leg position. I'm not sure about putting a brace on your knee. And
it seems a bit contrived, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I'm not so sure that's a good thing to be doing. But what he could do is try doing some deliveries from standing still, you know, and just rocking back slightly, bowling over that front leg, following through. And then do it from, you know, both hips pointing down the wicket, left foot forward, jump, you know, land and deliver. Do that, try and keep the front leg braced. And then just walk up 5 or 6 paces, walk it through, do some walkthroughs, and try and keep that front leg a bit straighter. And then finally jog up, and then run up with your normal sort of approach. And when it starts breaking down, the leg's bending, back pedal, and start doing your walkthroughs again. And just see if you can build it up a little bit.
If someone's got an error like that, which is... you know, it can be quite a big problem and they're sort of going back to try and rebuild that particular part of the action almost. How long does that, I mean, it probably varies for different people, but how long on average would you say that takes to sort of break it down and build it back up again?
Difficult. How long is a piece of string? I mean, different people will train, you know, more days a week than others. Someone will be more focused on trying to get it right than others. It varies from person to person, so it's quite. But what I will say, it's not easy to do. You know, it does take a bit of dedication. You know, you've got. It's not going to happen straight away. And as long as you know that, and you're going to have to work for it, you'll stick with it. But if you're expecting to do a handful of walkthroughs and then suddenly it's all going to work, then the chances are you'll get disappointed, and you'll give up. I'd like to see that bowl on film because it would get. You know it. Not like batting. Batting's a bit more, you know, you can, like a robot, you can look at it and go, you need to do this, this and this. But bowling, people are made differently. There's different physical makeups and that does affect, you know, how you run in and bowl. You know, I'd like to know if that bloke's sort of left side falls away at the crease. I'd like to know, is he a front-on bowler or a side-on bowler? What's his angle of run-up? Because if he's front-on, he should be running in reasonably straight. If he's side-on, he should have some sort of curve. So there's not too much rotating going on when he lands at the crease. You know, if he's a big, tall lad, You know, is his delivery stride too short? What does his front arm do? You know, bowling is very similar to batting in the way that you probably analyse it. Alignment, you know,
mm-hmm.
balance at the crease, and completion of action. Then you follow through. And within those three key areas, the coach looks at all the intricate, you know, bits, like is the foot sideways, pointing down a wicket, are the feet aligned up in the delivery stride? Does the head keep going down the wicket after the ball's been delivered? Do they fall away too quickly? Do both arms go right back behind you really obviously, or is it sort of a half-hearted effort? How far does the bowler follow through? Yeah, there are some simple guidelines to teach in bowling, but unfortunately, it's because we're all made differently, it's a lot more difficult than people think. And I think when you work with a bowler, trial and error needs to take place. You know, try from this angle. Try from this angle. And have a look at the outcome. And what does it feel like? Because if you get a front-on bowler and tell them to run up and turn and bowl sideways, they might just say, it just feels ridiculous. I cannot do it. Yet other people can do both. You've got to find out what suits that person, and you need to chat with them. You know, how does that delivery feel? Well, the front-on action, it felt really good. What about the outcome? Well, the outcome, the ball was just outside off stump, swinging in. Brilliant. Well, let's stick with that. But if you're not sure, and that does happen from time to time with bowling, then I would just leave there, whether they're front on and side on, and just tidy up what they're doing.
Thanks, Gary, for your time. If you want to find out more about Gary Palmer and his coaching, please visit www.pitchvision.com/Gary Palmer. Now, next we have a chat with Dr. Will James, the lead psychologist with the ECB. He works with the players from the A group right through to the English cricket team. Dr. Will James now works with a company called Lane 4 that helps businesses with leadership and teamwork. So let's have a listen to the chat David had with Dr. Will James.
Most people listening to this won't be high-performance sports people, but they will have some kind of ambition. Is there any difference in the way up-and-coming players should approach their mental game compared to elite players?
I guess the simple answer is no, but the reality is that they won't necessarily have as much time to spend on their game, whether it's the technical game or their mental game. And so one of the things I learned when working with the women's setup, the England women's setup, was to get the time proportionately spent proportionally in the right way. You know, players need to know the basics. They need to have the technical and the tactical knowledge. And I guess what we try and do to counter that, where time is short, is to make sure that when players are working on their technical game, and particularly when they're working on the tactical game, that they're building in their mental game as well. So you might not get the time to go away and work and study mental skills or be coached on mental skills, but the environment in which you train in, the way in which you approach your net sessions, the way in which you set up for, you know, for your net sessions, for me, whether you're an elite performer or not, should be very similar. It should be as tough as possible. It should be an environment that really allows you to always learn and to think about, you know, preparing yourself for what you're going to face in a match situation, and not just perfecting technique for the sake of perfecting technique. It's about, you know, a lot of this is about scrapping. It's about how you perform against the person at the other end. And so for me, you know, the more your training is like that, the better.
That's interesting, because I was going to go on to ask you that a bit later on, but let me ask you about that now. So have you got any practical examples of that?
Yes, absolutely. So within a net session, we would often help or advise that, you know, if you're working with a bowler, that they contract a bit with the batsman and say, here's what I'm trying to do. You know, here's the match situation. What I'd like from you is to, you know, here's my field. This is where I've got my my fielders. This is what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to restrict you from scoring runs at the end of an innings, or I'm trying to keep the run rate down a certain level, or I'm actually trying to take a wicket. You know, and so that's what I'm trying to do. And please, will you play my game almost, and not just run in and try and to play your own game of bowling line and length, because you won't necessarily get the right feedback in terms of how the person at the end responds. You don't get that whole sense of building pressure, which is so crucial and so much a part of of taking wickets and or indeed of dominating if you're a batsman. You don't get that if you're just simply playing, you know, playing your, or working on your skills in isolation. The other things that we often would argue is that there are, as you say, you physically script up a match scenario. So you say, okay, you know, you're X number of wickets down, and you know you're chasing this many runs, or you're trying to set this sort of target. You know, this is the field you're facing now. What are you going to do as a batsman? You've got six overs to play. How are you going to play? What, you know, and keep a tally, and therefore you might need to use other players or coaches as umpires to help make those scoring decisions, and just bring a sense of realism into the training. Really, my work in golf fuels this massively. You know, seeing golfers stand on the practice ground for hours hitting balls until they think they can hit them perfectly, and realizing that, of course, they only get one chance when they go on the fairway, and so actually, what you've got to do is, yes, there is a time for working on some technical skill, but very quickly you've got to get it into the real world of practicing, you know, the way that you're going to apply it in a match situation.
And if someone's struggling with that, someone is thinking to themselves, I do okay, I'm great in the nets. You know, you see that a lot at a lot of clubs. Yes. You know, someone who's a great net batsman, as soon as he gets out in the middle, he goes to pieces. If someone's struggling with that, and then you add pressure to practice, and then they start to struggle in practice as well, how do they develop their ability to work under pressure?
Well, I think, you know, if someone says, well, I don't want to do it in practice because I don't do it very well, unless they can do it brilliantly out in the middle, then where are they going with their game? You know, so the very fact they're struggling in practice isn't a bad thing. As you say, it highlights what they need to work on. So I think then it's about breaking it down. And for me, the key to success, and one of our aspirations with our England development players and England players, is to be very much in control of their own game. They know exactly what they do to perform at their best. They know their strengths. They know how their key technical cues, if you like, and mental cues in order to perform more consistently or most of the time at their best. And so that their training and their preparation is always referenced by those points. So, you know, you're having a net, it's not going so well, you're not doing particularly well under pressure. What do you refocus on? Well, you don't focus on how bad it is, you focus on what you've got to do. You have to need, but in order to concentrate on those things, you need to know what they are. It's a bit like if I get stuck cooking a meal for my wife, you know, I go back to the recipe book and I look at the next step on the recipe, and that gets me a level of confidence. I feel in control and know what I'm going to do. And what we're trying to get young players and indeed even senior players who've reached even the highest levels to do is to really consolidate their recipe, the way they perform at their best, and know it as, you know, to the point they can write it down. It can be really explicit, really simple. You know, I know I'm at my best when my head position, you know, is completely still, or I have a solid base during run up, or I know that what I'm doing is I'm thinking about watching the ball only, and if I start to worry about where I'm going to put it as the bowler's running in, then I've lost focus on the controllable, on what I'm trying to do. So for me, it's really identifying in players and helping players to say, look, what are your nuts and bolts? What is your recipe for high performance? That have all done it before, almost without thinking. Most players have had times where they've performed at their best, and it's been sort of subconscious. All we're trying to do is saying, come on, what was it? What were you trying to do? What were your goals? What were you thinking of trying to do? What were your expectations? How were you trying to do that? And you know, get it down to from maybe three or four pages of notes initially, down to a nice simple half page, six or seven bullet points. That for us is one of our key aims with players, so they feel in control. They can always go back to that. It's a source of refocusing cues if they need it.
And so it's just a matter really of racking your brains. It's in there somewhere. You've just got to draw it out.
Absolutely. I mean, I strongly believe no matter who you are, whether you've played the game for years or you know, a relative beginner, you have experience to draw on. And yes, we can add new knowledge, and we can give new knowledge as coaches and as more senior players to more junior players. But actually, if we can ask some questions and really get to the bottom of, you know, what are you trying to do? How are you trying to do it? When you're at your best, what did you do? It's a really good starting point. I'm not saying you won't have to add to that as you go along and say, well, actually, it looks like there's an area for improvement here. It looks like you could work on some skills to help you control your emotion, or some skills here to help you to think more positively, but actually the nuts and bolts of it, you know, people have got in their head. It's just about reviewing performance, and most of us don't do that effectively. We look at what we didn't do well rather than what we did do well. And so helping players, whether you're doing it yourself or whether you're doing it as a coach, helping people, helping yourself to really, you know, spend some time over a period of weeks, probably, you know, compiling this list in your little black book of high performance, as I would call it, is crucial. And then you might come up against, you know, one or two areas you need some help with. How do I do this? You know, I'm not sure how I actually do that. Maybe it's concentrating, or maybe it's dealing with some anxieties around a certain type of bowler. Fine, you can then get specialist help on that. But for me, it's getting the nuts and bolts down first of all, foremost.
Thanks, Dr. James, for your time. I have noticed that we don't have our question section for this week, but we still need your questions for next week. We need to keep rolling through them. So if you have any questions, any queries, anything you want to touch on, please email us at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. So they can be batting, bowling, fielding, captaincy questions David can answer. So please email us. And you can get more information, tips, advice, and tricks on our website at www.pitchvision.com. The site is updated daily and includes forums to chat with other cricketers around the world. You can also subscribe to the My Cricket Coach Show for free on iTunes. Or you can click the link on the show's page that will take you directly to iTunes to subscribe so that you can put it on your iPod. Stay tuned for our next show on the 26th of February. Thanks for listening, and we hope to see you next time. So from Sydney, Australia, this is Kevin Sampat signing off.
And this is David Hinchliffe in the UK.